he's given an opportunity to redeem himself by going to the United States to present Premier Trump with Johnny the Monkey, who's the nation's like idol, like Johnny the Monkey, as a gift to Premier Trump.
Minister for Culture and number one porno star in Kazakhstan, Johnny the Monkey.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And that image, which goes along with that statement, is horrific.
Hello and welcome to episode 24 of the Dan and Joe Film Show. Hope you're doing well. Hope you're keeping safe. Thank you so much for listening to the show. And as always, I'm joined by my gorgeous winter snowman. He's got a lovely cream cream cardigan on today. It's Mr. Joe Richards. Hello, Joey.
Hello, Dan. You okay?
Yeah, I'm good. Thank you.
Yeah, we talked about this little cardigan. You're a fan of it, aren't you?
I do. I love my woolly Christmas jumpers. I think there's nothing like it.
Yeah, I do miss seeing your wardrobe around this time of year, you know, your jumpers. We always talk about your jumpers with like a slogan on the front of it, like live life to the full on there with like a sunset kind of design on there. I do miss those sorts of jumpers and your turtlenecks, your polo necks. I do miss those at this
Definitely.
Time of year.
I was going to wear one with Love in Lockdown on it, but I was like, yeah, I can't really do that.
No. If that doesn't exist, make it now. Just like, you know, manufacture it. Get an Etsy store or something like that. But yes, I went shopping last weekend because I had the funny feeling that I wasn't going to be able to do that for a little while after last weekend. So last Saturday, I had a very productive morning. I went to the bank, I went to the shopping, I did all sorts of things, just basically getting everything as much as I can done before we've gone back into our circuit break lockdown, as they call it here in Wales. But how are you? How have you been?
I've been good. So people who don't know, you probably do know, I'm a teacher. And obviously, we've had a long 8 weeks in school. And this week has just kind of been mad because we have had cases pop up in the school. Very, wow. Very small cases. But we've done well. You know, we've got to the end of a term. It's unfortunate we couldn't get right to the end. But yeah, it's been great. It's been a nice week, you know. Some of the year groups have had to go home, so it's been a bit quieter in the school. And yeah, it's been really good. I mean, obviously, kind of, I'm going back to work now after half term, but I know a lot of people are kind of, for most people, lockdown-wise, it is kind of 2 weeks for everybody. But yeah, things are going really, really well. You know, we're coming up to Christmas now. I'm kind of focusing on that. I'm trying to be excited for that.
You said the C word. We haven't even done our Halloween special, and you're already talking about Christmas.
Oh, Halloween's over. Halloween's cancelled now, isn't it? Come on. I mean,
yeah, that is true.
Yeah. So yeah, I've been good. But how are you feeling about the next 2 weeks, obviously, of lockdown? We've been through here before, haven't we? Back in March, April. And I think the worst thing is I always said, back in April, May, I could go jogging. It was nice weather. You could get fresh air. Now, not so much, is it really?
Yeah, and that's a shame, I guess. And I think we are going to have to be way more creative with the ways that we do kind of keep ourselves entertained and fit as well. I actually purchased a Fitbit. I'm showing you that now. And obviously, the listeners can't see that. But I saw like a really good deal for one. And I invested in it because I just had to. I think when this all started at the beginning of like 2020, I kind of embraced the whole lockdown thing. So like literally getting up 5 minutes before work because I'm working from home, like wearing my pajamas all the time and just kind of, you know, literally finishing at 4:30 and then just having food there ready to go straight away and whatnot. But now I think because it is for the foreseeable future that I think this is going to be going on and on, I've had no choice but to invest in a Fitbit to kind of keep me active and stuff, because otherwise I will be the size of a boat by the time we come out of the other side of this. And this is a little cool gadget, you know, like kind of nudges me every hour to like do 250 steps. So if I do run off mid-show, you know why. I'm just getting my 250 steps in. But I think, you know, Mark Drakeford has said that it's going to be 2 weeks and that's it for now. And I can see his thinking of it. There are certain aspects, obviously, that we don't maybe agree with, like the non-essential thing, which we're not going to kind of go into. This isn't a political show. But I think providing it's 2 weeks and then the cinemas and stuff can reopen again, fingers crossed we can have a clear run through to Christmas then, which would be nice. And I think that's the main thing that I'm kind of worried about at the moment is cinemas again.
Absolutely. But, you know, like you said, there's lots of good films out right now. Lots of good films in cinemas and on streaming. And we've all been really, really good because we've managed to catch, just in the nick of time, the new Liam Neeson film, Honest Thief, which we're going to be talking about. What's going to be talking about? Trial of Chicago 7, which did get a cinema release. It's now on Netflix. And also Borat 2, which is released on Amazon Prime. And The Secret Garden as well. That's kind of getting a cinema release and also is being released on Sky Cinema as well. So lots of good films to talk about. It's time, though, to introduce a very special guest. He's a fellow Welshie, which we love on the show. It's been a very long time since we've had a Welsh guest. You can catch him every Friday on BBC Radio Wales. He gives all of his film opinions on that. He's a Welsh journalist, film critic, comedian, columnist. He does it all. Please welcome to the show, Gary Slaymaker. Hi, Gary.
Afternoon. Thank you very much, gentlemen.
It's our pleasure. Shamai, welcome. Obviously, speaking of lockdown, how's it been for you this year? How have you been coping in lockdown? And how has that affected kind of your film choices and what you've watched in the last year?
I've had a great lockdown. Well, the thing is, I can't stand people. So it's been ideal for me not having to bother with anyone. It was kind of weird. When lockdown kicked in, we were already in the middle of making a documentary for Radio Wales. So that was the 2 weeks gone. Off the back of that, we then did a light dance programme for Radio Cymru, which took up another month. Then the girlfriend and I split up, so that was 2 weeks of ignoring everything. And then once that was over, I had basically 3 days to enjoy lockdown. God, I'm bored. So I took my first novel called A Sach We Know, it's The Onion Bag, which was a raucous comedy about non-league football, and I went and recorded an audiobook version of it. So really, I've just kept busy. And obviously, the Friday slot on Radio Wales with Larry Shawn has kept going, thankfully, throughout the whole lockdown.
You've been kept very, very busy then. And I listen to your BBC Radio Wales every Friday with Larry Shawn.
Very kind.
Your film reviews. And it's great because obviously you must phone in for that. And it's great that we have the technology where that can carry on even though you're not face-to-face.
Larry and I haven't seen each other since March. Within the first week of lockdown happening, I knew, well, we're going to have to rethink the way we do broadcasting. So I bought myself a decent microphone. The BBC then got in touch with me and we set up the lines, the internal radio lines that they use in Central Square, as is now, but was in BBC Llandaff, access straight in then to the building. And you know, the quality of sound is better than having to do it through the telephone. Mm. Well, there's still teething problems within the new building. Every so often my voice disappears or turns Dalek-y. and there's been a few times where I've started doing the review section here on the computer using the mic, and then something's cut out, and I've ended up finishing it off just on the landline, just over the phone, which is odd. But, you know, this is what you have to put up with now.
Yeah. Well, thank you again for joining us. It's going to be a great show. I can feel it.
What would you want to be known for on Earth? Become the person that you were born to be? Spend your precious hours doing what will bring out the real you, that's ready to contribute something meaningful into this world. I got the gig. I really need a haircut today, man. Can you fit me in? Whoa, sorry. Hello? So what do you want to be remembered for?
Big news this week, apart from lockdown, obviously, is Disney Plus. So Disney Plus launched back in March of this year. It currently has 60 million users for Disney Plus across the world. So definitely kind of pushing the boundaries in terms of that. But under the new organization, Karine Daniel, who's an executive at Disney Plus, has now announced a strategic restructuring of its media and entertainment divisions, basically trying to make sure that they're paying enough attention to the online digital streaming side of Disney Plus, which could affect cinema release places in the future, because we've seen this year, obviously with different releases, they've been pushed onto streaming. We spoke about Mulan, Joe, I know a couple of weeks ago, and how they put that on Disney Plus for a PVOD price. Gabby, what's your thoughts on this? Do you think Disney Plus are going to kind of focus more on streaming, or do you think there's always going to be a need for them to release films in cinemas?
Well, cinemas are out there and you have these huge blockbuster tentpole movies, it's the best place to see them. However much you might be a fan of, or not, the MCU, the Marvel Cinematic Universe, the places that those films play out best are on huge screens. And it was weird, last weekend, I'm helping setting questions for the next run of S4C's Mastermind show. And last weekend, someone asked for the MCU, that the whole of the Marvel Universe wow. as their category. So I spent the whole weekend watching all 21 films. And even though I've got a decent-sized TV, it's just not the same. Yeah. You know, I can't imagine watching Avengers Endgame for the first time on a television rather than the majesty of seeing it on a big screen. So for the smaller films, more personal films, you know, streaming is fine. I think independent film is really going to get a boost from the way we're doing things at the moment, perhaps more than the big companies.
Joe, what are your thoughts on this? Obviously, because we spoke before about smaller budget indie films, and obviously maybe if they are put onto streaming, they're going to reach a bigger audience than maybe they would have in cinemas, and leaving those MCU films, the Marvel films, the big blockbusters like Gary suggested, leaving them to cinema. Do you think that's fair, or do you think indie films deserve to be seen on the big screen?
Yeah, I think you know, there's got to be a balance, isn't there? I think the best kind of thing we've seen, the best film which has handled this has been Bill and Ted Face the Music, especially in America particularly. You know, that had a theatrical release, but it had a home release as well. And then it gives people the option to go to see it on a big screen or to see it on their smaller screen. And I think that is the way forward for kind of independent cinema, give people the option. But I think with Disney in particular, I think this was, I think, only a natural progression for them. I think they created Disney Plus and there was a lot of hype surrounding Disney Plus. And then it sort of came out, and I know COVID has had a big impact on how much content they can put on there, but it sort of came out. And then a couple of months later, people are like, well, I'm sort of bored of it already. You know, there's not enough content when you compare it to something like Netflix, which is like got a big release sort of every week or every other week. Disney Plus just aren't putting the content on there at the moment. So I think they've kind of taken that on board. I think they're forward thinking. And I think we're going to hear a lot about this in the coming months about film studios kind of thinking ahead to next year, because, you know, as much as, I mean, a couple of months ago, we thought we were fine. We thought cinema was fine. Christopher Nolan released Tenet and James Bond was going to be out a couple of months later and we're all good. But obviously that hasn't happened. So I think it's only natural for big kind of studios like Disney to be forward thinking ahead to 2021 and thinking, well, look, if we're stuck in this position for another 12 months, then we're going to have to do something. You know, they're only going to sit on Black Widow for so long. And if come January, we're still in this position, they're going to have no choice but to release it. So I think it's only natural, and I think I'm not surprised. Obviously, Soul is coming out on December 25th, and I think that's good. The conversation will be whether or not they stick to that PVOD. Are they going to charge the Mulan prices, or are they going to just keep it at the £5 monthly rate at the moment? Because Netflix, you know, they've kind of stuck to their £15, £18 a month, and you get, you know, however much for that. I think if Disney go down the road of literally charging people for Soul, which they've said they're not going to do, but like Black Widow and things like that, I think that's going to really not do them any kind of favours, to be honest.
Yeah. That was my issue. I mean, if you're already paying enough for a subscription channel like Disney Plus, I thought, how do you then justify charging people £20 for Mulan? Yeah. But it seemed to have worked. A lot of people did go with it, but I'm hoping that's the exception rather than the rule. It's the same mentality that the Premier League have been using for charging people extra to watch football games, even though they're subscribing to a sports channel. Mm. And I think that's a dangerous road to head down.
Yeah, well, fingers crossed, Disney Plus. Try and get those films out to cinemas. And obviously, we've still got a few blockbusters coming out. Death on the Nile, Wonder Woman 1984, James Bond, of course. So we'll wait and see how they do.
You know why you're on trial here?
The whole world is watching.
You all right?
It was until I saw that.
Martin's dead. Bob is dead. Jesus is dead. They tried it peacefully. We gonna try something else.
These rebels without a job.
They're a threat to national security.
This revolution, we may have to hurt somebody's feelings.
When you came to Chicago, were you hoping to draw the police into a confrontation? I'm concerned you have to think about it.
Give me a moment, would you, friend? I've never been on trial for my thoughts before.
The first film we're going to be speaking about is The Trial of Chicago 7. And Gary, do you want to tell us a little bit about this one?
Yeah, well, it's based on a true story. It goes back to 1968 when there were riots in Chicago during the time of a Republican conference. And seven of those arrested were then put up on trial for all kinds of spurious allegations, really. And the minute the trial begins, you know that it's a complete setup, that these guys are just there to take the fall. It is also weird that there's eight guys on trial, but because one of them, being one of the members of the Black Panther, will not be represented or can't be represented by the lawyer looking after the other seven, it's almost as if he's been slightly airbrushed out of history on this one. But he is there front and center. So yeah, really, it's essentially the court case that follows this riot, but also you get flashbacks to incidents within the riot that's led to this trial.
I've not been able to watch this. I've watched everything else today. I've not been able to catch this. But Joe, what did you think of it?
I thought it was really, really great. And it's going to be coming up a lot in the next couple of weeks. We've got Mangrove coming up in a few weeks' time, which we're going to be talking about from Steve McQueen. And it's sort of a similar kind of style of a courtroom drama. I'm a big fan of Aaron Sorkin. I think he's one of the best writers out there in terms of what he does. Steve Jobs is one of my favorite films of the last few years, and I think it's criminally underrated. I know, Dan, you think the same as well. And so I was looking forward to this because I do love his style. I do love his writing. This isn't as good as Steve Jobs, because Steve Jobs had that whole, it was like an opera, Steve Jobs. It was so dramatic, and the music, and it was just brilliant filmmaking. But it's still classic Sorkin. It's got that punchy script. It's fast paced. I think it's like 2 hours, 10 minutes, but it does kind of, it's snappy. The dialogue is snappy. It's witty. It's intelligent, as you would expect from Aaron Sorkin. I think really it's one of those cases, and we'll talk about this later on with Borat 2 as well, where like events of the past few months have kind of helped like Sorkin's film, if anything, because it is a film about protest, the power of protest, the importance of freedom of speech, and the need for holding corrupt systems and unjust systems to account. And we've seen that in real life over the past few months with the Black Lives Movement and everything like that. So it is very, very timely. There's this chant all the way through the film, which is "the whole world is watching," which I think is a really powerful statement. And I just think it's also got some brilliant performances. You know, Sacha Baron Cohen is kind of getting a lot of buzz around it because, you know, it's a serious, more kind of serious role. I wouldn't say it's that serious. He's still sort of playing the clown through the film, but he's sort of getting a lot of the attention. I think that's rightly so. Eddie Redmayne is fine. He's sort of Eddie Redmayne, to be honest. And Frank Langella, honestly, Dan, Frank Langella's performance, he plays one of the like worst villains I've seen on like screen for 2020, certainly. I mean, it put Skeletor to shame. He played Skeletor. And like, I thought, well, this guy's worse than Skeletor because he plays the judge who's can't tell like if it's a combination of just like he's losing his mind, like he's got Alzheimer's or something like that, dementia, or if he's just really horrible and, you know, doesn't agree with the protest, or if it's a combination of both. So you kind of, he puts in a great performance because you just sit there just seething with anger every time he's on screen. So I think it is powerful. It's not Sorkin's best. But there's a lot to enjoy from it. I don't think I lost much from seeing it on the TV. And I think considering everything that's gone on this year, it is very, very timely. So I really, really liked it. But what did you think, Gary?
Joe, I've been a fan of Sorkin's ever since I saw The American President, which then led to The West Wing. And The West Wing has been one of my go-to TV series over the years. I still maintain the first episode of The West Wing is still the greatest first episode of any TV series ever made, you know. So, yes, and since then I've watched pretty much everything Sorkin's done. I felt he was going off the boil the last few years. Social Network was just gabble. It was just constant blah, blah, blah. I know he likes to be wordy and he likes to pound as many words into a sentence as possible, but all it felt like was jargon and just twaddle being done by hipsters. And I just lost me after a while. There was a coldness to it. And weirdly enough, I felt even more that sort of coldness about the Steve Jobs movie. I don't think Fassbender comes across well as Steve Jobs. There's a coldness in the man himself. And again, it's the script. It's just battling through the dialogue. And considering it was written, directed by Danny Boyle, you would have no idea this was a Danny Boyle film unless you saw his name on the credits. Because it's the script itself subsumes the talents of the director. So I went into Chicago 7 with mixed feelings before it started. And by the time it ended, I thought, okay, he's back on form. Because it's wordy and it's weighty, but it's also great fun. And seeing as Sorkin had already written A Few Good Men, I knew that he could do a courtroom movie if he wanted to. But the great thing is that it's these flashbacks that take you out to the court and add another dimension to the whole film. I completely agree with Joe that Frank Langella is the MVP of the movie. It's just because it's that fine line between senility and bigotry that just makes it such a fascinating. And obviously, Langella's got form. I mean, having played Richard Nixon, you see him as someone who's quite imposing in personality. So it makes sense that he's this judge. I thought Mark Rylance was superb as the defense lawyer, just getting ever more frustrated in having dealing with this judge as well. And it's kind of weird at the beginning, when you first see Sacha Baron Cohen, you're going, oh, is this a new one of his characters? Borat, Bruno, is this one, is Abby supposed, because you just can't get that idea of Sacha Baron Cohen out of your mind rather than him being a comedy character. And as the film progresses, of course, there's more depth to the character that we see. And I think that really works as well in pushing the message home. And yeah, it is incredibly timely, because you could almost argue it's a battle about democracy in that courtroom as well, which is exactly what America's dealing with at the moment.
Well, sounds brilliant. And Trial of Chicago 7 is available now on Netflix, so make sure to check it out. Moving on now to something very, very different. This is Honest Thief, starring Liam Neeson. It's directed by Mark Williams, and he's back. We haven't seen him for a long while, Liam, but he is back. And this time he's playing a professional bank robber known as the In-N-Out Bandit. What a name, eh?
Lovely.
All of his life, he's been a bit of a bank robber. He's stolen 9 million from all these different banks. But he's gotten to an age now where he wants to settle down. He's met this lovely woman played by Kate Walsh, who plays Annie. And he wants to come clean. He wants to be an honest man. And what he does is he contacts the FBI. He says to them, right, if I give you the location of this cash, I want to be given a reduced sentence so that I can spend the rest of my days with the love of my life, played by Kate Walsh. But what happens is two kind of duty cops, played by Jake Courtney and Anthony Ramos, decide to infiltrate that. They decide to take the cash for themselves, and he ends up on a cat and mouse trail to the truth. Here's a clip.
What took so long? Did you find it?
We did. Right where you said it'd be. Let's have a chat.
So, do we have a deal?
I hear you're a Marine. How many times you ship out?
Quite a few, actually.
Guess that makes you kind of dangerous, huh?
What's with the gloves? Whoa, whoa, hey.
Pick it up.
I'm turning myself in.
it up.
This isn't what we talked about.
Did you count it? The cash. Did you count it?
What would have happened if I counted it?
When you got to 3 million, you would have run out of money.
Bullshit.
Figured I might need a bargaining chip. Seems I was right.
3's a lot of money.
Yeah, but 9 sounds better, doesn't it?
That was the clip there from Honest Thief. And we've all seen this. We just about catched it, didn't we, in the cinemas? Because I know, obviously, in England right now and everywhere else, pretty much, it is being played in the cinema. But in Wales, obviously, we haven't got cinema for the next 2 weeks. So we kind of just got in there for this. I love Liam Neeson. Something about him, he can take a script that's really generic, really kind of predictable, and he does elevate it some way. And because he does take it seriously, and I've been a big fan of him, I think, in films like Nonstop, a massive fan of that film because it's exhilarating, it's pulse pounding, and it's really tense as well. It's a really tense hour and a half. If you haven't seen Nonstop, go and watch that. Also, films like The Commuter, I think he does really well. That kind of Hitchcockian psychological thriller, he does really, really well. And you know, even in films like Ordinary Love, which came out last year, he's great at dramas too. He, you know, he has that side to him. He's a very versatile actor. And this, for me, I thought was okay. I thought it had its moments. I think in particular, I really, really enjoyed his relationship with Kate Walsh. I thought the central love interest for me was the best thing in the film. But I just found it very generic. I found it like it was something from the 1990s. I felt like Liam Neeson is slightly better than this. And I felt like there just wasn't enough character development for me to really invest in him. I didn't really care what was going to happen to him because he is a criminal, he is a bank robber. But for me, Kate Walsh was great. I thought she was kind of the best thing in the film, really. And she brought a lot of warmth, a lot of heart to the story, and made it, like Gabby spoke about earlier, made it less cold for me. And the action scenes are fine. I think they, you know, they pop up every now and then. I saw this with my other half and she really enjoyed it, like really loved it. And I was like, wow, I was not expecting that at all. But for me, it just comes across as a bit predictable, a bit generic. Neeson can do better. We've seen him do far better, but it is his worst film, not at all. I did enjoy it. It's 90 minutes. It flew by for me. Jay Courtney, though, I'm still not a big fan of him at all. I think he's just miscast here. And yeah, so I thought it was okay. I mean, do you have to rush out to the cinema to watch it? No, but you know, it's up to you, really. Gary, what about you?
I think it's probably one of the best reasons why we've shut down cinemas in Wales for the next day. It's the title. It's got to be one of the most dull titles that I've come across in a long, long time. Then, as you said, you've described the plot. Now, it is possibly the most idiotic plot I've come across in a good few years, because here's my thinking, right? So he's robbed these banks. He's got 9 million. He falls in love with this woman, wants to make reparations. I'll give the money back and I'll do my time in jail and she'll be waiting. So he phones the FBI and they go, well, you might not be the bank robber. No, but I am the bank robber. But you might not be, because other people have said they're the bank robber. No, but I am the bank robber. And it's clear from the way the FBI are acting, they don't really give a damn. And they've pretty much given up on this guy. He's been doing it for 8 years and they've got no clue as to who it is. And I just thought, well, if I was you, Liam, I'd just say, stuff it and take the money and the missus and just go off and have a lovely life. Or go to a country where there's no extradition to America. You've got $9 million. So I just thought, I've just ended this film in 10, 15 minutes. So I'm going to have to sit through the rest of it. But it's all right. Yeah, as you say, it's knockabout nonsense. Yeah, I'm not convinced. Jay Courtney has only been good in Suicide Squad. And even then, he got to play an Aussie, which he is. And a drunk Aussie at that, which is their natural state of being, obviously. But it's everything's generic. And as soon as the thing is set up that Liam Neeson is going to take the fall for these two rogue FBI agents, I said, and I was thinking, I was like, I bet he's like ex-SAS or ex-Marine or something. And then, boom, 5 minutes later, oh, yeah, well, I went to the Marines for it. Oh, mate. It's like, so you've got all the skills and you can rob banks. Of course, these idiots in the FBI haven't got a hope. So it ticks every box going in the cliche. And I came up thinking, well, I didn't feel I wasted an hour and a half in front of a computer screen, though I'd have been more annoyed if I'd been sat in the cinema having paid 5-6 quid for it, I think.
this film made me really miss you, Dan, because I was sat there and I was on my own and I was right at the back and I was just like stifling laughter all the way through. And I thought if Dan was here now, we would just be rolling, just crying with laughter.
We'd have tears in our eyes.
People would hate us because we'd be laughing so much at it. And I did feel bad. There were a couple of moments where I just had to let out a laugh and people were sort of looking at me like, is he okay? Is something wrong? Because it is that type of film where it's just so cliched and so generic that you just can't help but laugh, and it does take itself, it's like it's taking itself so seriously for what it is. And I think that's my main problem with this one. Since we've had like the Nissonnaissance, if we want to call it that, you know, with Taken, nice. Where people are like, oh yeah, Neeson can do action films, let's just give him like loads of action films. You know, they've kind of got progressively sillier, you know, nonstop, I think, being the most silly. We are with the plane and everything like that. And for me, I kind of missed that. To me, this didn't push the silliness, you know, enough. That, you know, in the action sequences, you know, they could have, I mean, there is a car chase where he's driving a van full of bagels, but that's about as silly as the action sort of gets. And I just thought, this is really bland. Like, you know, I just want a bit more of a punch to it. I just want something even more sillier, if anything. But it's sort of stuck in that purgatory between being silly and being really boring. And yeah, it just made me laugh so much. It's that type of film which we have seen time and time again. It's like the script has been sat on a shelf somewhere since 1993. And somebody's kind of dusted it off and gone, oh, this sounds pretty decent. Let's chuck Liam Neeson this and I'm sure he'll do a decent job. And it does feel really, you know, outdated. And it is that type of film where everybody's all kind of clenched jawed and they say, you know, these like sort of one-liners. And I think my favorite part was like the detective who, you know, is kind of on Liam Neeson's case and his partner's been murdered. And towards the end, without spoiling too much, Liam Neeson's on the phone to him and like the cop's like all silent. Then he just goes, is there anything you need? And like he's like on his side now and he's all clenched jawed. I was like, this is just genre like 101. And like there's a moment where Liam Neeson breaks into the house and he like pins up a guy against the wall and the guy's like, are you gonna kill me? And Liam Neeson's like, no, I'm not a murderer. And I was honestly thought he was gonna go, I'm not a murderer, I'm just an honest thief, and like do it to the camera. And that would have been brilliant. I would have given it extra marks if he'd done that, to be honest. But yeah, it is, for me, it just lacked any sort of, it's just like forgettable. And it is that thing of, does, you know, tell, not show. And you know, there's literally a 5-minute sequence where she goes, so tell me about your history. And like Gary was saying, there's like this whole sequence there where he goes, well, I was a Marine and then my father got, you know, and like you sat there, like they're on a park bench for like 5-10 minutes talking about, you know, literally explaining his backstory. And it's like, just show that, you know, and like just show it in a more kind of intelligent way, maybe. And yeah, it just lost me. And again, like Gary, as soon as they were like, oh, he's a Marine with experience with landmines. I was like, this going to get any more predictable? I mean, obviously, it's going to happen. And I'd love to see a role, Liam Neeson, do one of these action films where he's just like an IT nerd or something like that who has got no skills and just gets by through the skin of his teeth, you know, as opposed to like have like all these super like, you know, skills with explosions and guns and stuff. So
I think the problem is that, you know, you look at Liam Neeson, well, he's 6'4" and built like a brick outhouse. he's never going to play that nerd. He's always going to, well, yeah. Impressive stature of a man. So they've got to build him up in a way.
Yeah. But yeah,
And it's also the thing, as I say, it sets out from the start, he's an honest thief. He's never hurt anyone during any of his robberies, and he wants to go straight. So you know there's no chance he's ever going to kill anyone during this film. Because if he does that, then he's going to be in jail a lot longer than he wants to be. So
yes.
You know, the whole film is stacked against you.
Yeah, absolutely.
It does feel like something that maybe Bruce Willis or Nicolas Cage was offered and they were like, oh, we're really busy, we can't do it. But I think
if
with
this
Bruce
is a film
Willis,
Nicolas Cage turned out, wow.
Definitely. And I do think Bruce Willis, there's a certain kind of self-awareness of Bruce Willis. Like, he knows he's in a really cheesy, generic film and he's just like he's so bad in it. But I kind of enjoy watching that. I feel like Liam Neeson was in a different film. I feel like he was taking it really seriously.
Yeah, absolutely. Because he's got to. And what I will say, like both of you have kind of hinted to, first of all, glad that I'm not the I can't stand Jay Courtney, and I'm glad I'm not the only one who feels that way. And I'm glad
something about him in there. There is something about him. I don't know. I can't put my finger on it.
No personality, and like Gary said, really, I think that is why Suicide Squad was his best role, because at least he had a personality in that. But you take him out of that in that role, and he's just bland. He's just
a caricature.
He's a caricature, and so. Don't like him at all. So I'm glad we're on the same page about that. But I posted my review on Instagram on my personal page, as I do afterwards, and I gave it 2 stars. And a guy messaged me and he was like, 2 stars? That's a bit much, isn't it? And I was like, he hadn't even seen the film. Mm-hmm. And what I will say is that even though it is, you know, not great at all, I have seen far worse films in 2020, believe you me. Oh, so even though it's not, you know, anything great, this is a film which you, like you said, we don't rush out to the cinema to watch. If you see it on BBC One on a Saturday night or something like that, it might do the job for an hour and a half, but no need to rush out and watch it.
It's a pizza and beers cold Saturday night in movie, isn't it?
Absolutely.
It does feel very televisual, yeah. So there we are. Honest Thief is in cinemas now, so maybe not check it out.
Ago, I released a movie film which brought great shame to Kazakhstan. But now I was instructed to return to Yankee Land to carry out secret mission.
I go to America!
What do you say? No, it's not me.
People make recognize my face. I would need disguises.
This man is a sex criminal?
No, no sex friendly.
I will take this to be a fat like American man.
Yeah, this is a good one. Where is his crumb?
What is problem, officer?
Got somebody that's strapped to the top of your car. He's in that passenger seat, boss.
Only men and bears are allowed inside car. I'm here to give my daughter as a gift to someone close to the throne.
I need a dress with real sexy peels.
This is a bag that just goes over the dress.
They're nice.
I really like this.
Let us present Sandra Jessica Parker Drummond.
I want this one with the baby on it. I have a baby inside me.
Can you take it out?
No, we cannot. That's not what we do here.
I feel bad because I was the one who put the baby in her.
Did you ever put one in your daughter?
No, I did not.
Moving on now to the sequel, the long-awaited sequel of Borat. It's been like 14 years in the making, and it's available on Amazon Prime. Joe, tell us all about it.
So yes, this is the surprise sequel as well, which I think is strange. I wasn't aware of it. I don't know if either of you were aware of it until it was announced like a couple of months ago, or a month or so ago. So a surprise sequel, a Borat subsequent movie film. You know, he does love his film titles there, Sacha Baron Cohen. And it's basically, at the beginning of the film, we catch up with Borat. We find out what he's been doing for the last 14 years since... The first film was released, and we find out that Kazakhstan did not take kindly to the first film at all. And they've been, since the first film, they've kind of been made out to be a bit of a joke. So Borat's like, you know, basically in slave labor in Kazakhstan, digging rocks and so on and so forth. He's given an opportunity to redeem himself by going to the United States to present Premier Trump with Johnny the Monkey. who's the nation's like idol, like Johnny the Monkey, as a gift to Premier Trump.
Minister for Culture and number one porno star in Kazakhstan, Johnny the Monkey.
Yeah, absolutely. And that image, which goes along with that statement, is horrific. So he goes to America, and then through events outside of his control, and events I'm not going to spoil here, He's not able to provide Premier Trump with the Johnny the Monkey. His daughter has instead sneaked to the United States with him, a newly discovered daughter he didn't realize he had previously. She's only 15 years old. And when Johnny the Monkey is unable to be presented to Premier Trump, Borat decides that maybe he can present Premier Trump with his 15-year-old daughter instead. I rewatched Borat for the first time since it was released in the cinemas 14 years ago on Monday night, because I just wanted to like remind myself of it. I remember the time that it came out, and it was just so shocking, and everybody was talking about it. It was one of those films that just everybody was, it was packing out theaters and people were just talking about it long afterwards. So I wanted to go back and see if it like held up. You know, as often the case with comedies, you know, the biggest kind of problem they face is, do they stand the test of time? And I think it does stand the test of time. But also, when you watch the first film, I was shocked to think, well, it feels like he barely scratched the surface of, you know, the American kind of, you know, the stuff like racism and frat boy culture and stuff that's going on in America. And when you compare the politics of the first film to the politics now of the second film, you know, it makes perfect sense that Sacha Baron Cohen thought, well, now is the time to bring back Borat. Like we said with the trial of Chicago 7, it is timely. And more so than that, I mean, the stars aligned even more for him, because while he was filming it, COVID broke out. So, you know, while he's mid-production, COVID-19 happened. So not only now has he got Trump to satirize and American politics, he's got the COVID situation to deal with as well. So for me, that gives the film a purpose and a direction, which I actually found the first film didn't really have. I mean, the first film, obviously, he brings to light through meeting all these Americans, you know, obviously flaws within the culture and very scary stuff that goes on in America. But also the main plot of it is him trying to steal Pamela Anderson and marry Pamela Anderson against her will. And, you know, when you compare the plot of that compared to the plot this time, where it's basically a father-daughter relationship. It's all about, you know, him bringing his daughter over to America, and his daughter herself kind of gaining independence and finding out, you know, that women can live a certain other way outside of Kazakhstan, and, you know, kind of, like I said, becoming a strong, empowered woman. That gives it a, like, feminist edge, which I just would not expect from a Borat movie at all. And it shows a real kind of development of the character. And I've seen lots of people being sniffy about this online, saying that they don't want Borat to be about, you know, a father-daughter. They want him to just be that offensive character, but at the end of the day, you know, it shows that character development really well for Borat, and it's kind of got that message of, hey, if Borat can change, and if Borat can kind of change his political views, then anybody can change their political views, really. And I thought, actually, me and Hannah, my better half, watched it together, and at the end she was like, that was strangely wholesome. Like, that was kind of sweet at the end. And I was like, you're right. And there's even a scene where these two American guys who he like stays in a cabin with for like 4 days. And they're like, they're ridiculous, the theories they come up with and everything. But even they were quite sweet in that they were trying to help him out. So I think the film has got a wholesome edge to it, which I wasn't expecting. And for me, that just elevates it above the first film. I preferred this to the first film, I've got to say. I think Maria Bakalova, who plays his daughter, is a great find. She is absolutely terrific. And let's not underestimate how hard that performance is. You know, she's going into these situations and, you know, doing some crazy stuff. And, you know, I think she deserves a lot of credit. So for me, a lot of people, it's getting a lot of mixed responses. But I thought it was absolutely brilliant.
I'm not surprised there have been mixed responses, because that really defines the way people think of Borat anyway. He's a proper Marmite character. I think you either love him or you hate him. I've loved him from the start. Of all the characters that Sacha Baron Cohen has created, you know, you go back to the 11 o'clock show when these boys started appearing. Well, Ali G, once you got what the joke was, that this is supposedly, you know, a down with the ute kind of urban bloke chatting to MPs, showing how out of depth. But once people had twigged what he was doing, that's the end of the run. Bruno was always a one gag character, one note character even. Borat, though, from the start, because he could play the innocent and people would make fun of him, or he could be incredibly brutal in the way he would be talking to feminists as I usually be in cage, or he's, you know, he's talking to hunt saboteurs, but no, he's good to hunt the bear in Kazakhstan. so he was either winding you up or being the focus of people winding him up, so, and it works. And it's weird, as Joe said, I can't remember what the main plot of that first Borat film was, but I do remember the Pamela Anderson thing. Mm. So it's just really a selection of sketches almost, just showing how bad Americans can be. And obviously, 14 years later, we know how bad Americans can be, because look at the bloody idiot they elected president. And it's unbelievable because he's gone back now. And I think this is a much better story because there's a proper thread from let's take Johnny the Monkey to Donald Trump to, oh, hang on, no, let's take my daughter to Vice Premier Mike Pence. And then so everything that happens within the film starts from that one place. So it's not as if they're just dropping in bits and pieces. There's a thread, a whole thread that runs to the end. As in, what they do is also make it a lot more political than I expected. It is clear, I think it's funnier. It's also far worse taste than the first one. Not going into detail, but it's the father-daughter debutante ball dance, which is stomach-churning and absolutely hysterical at one at the same time. And I just went, the cojones on you people to get this one past the censors, to be more than anything. But yeah, it comes down to, as we mentioned, Maria Bakalova, Oscar nomination. And give her the Oscar now, because the guts to wander in and do what she did. And it's the same with Cohen. And it's interesting, within the first 3-4 minutes of him arriving in America, people are coming up going, hey, Borat, high five. So you can see how they've had to change the whole plot of this film on the fly, because obviously the character's so well known now, which, hence all these disguises he wears. But that's, again, works as a huge plus point for the film as well. I just loved it. And they say, there's feminist stuff. It's quite sweet and warm sometimes, but I also sat here in pain with laughter, and that's what I really wanted from my Borat movie.
I didn't like it as much as the first one. I'm sorry, I'm going to have to be a downer on this one. Just because, and the reason being, Gary, you touched upon it just then. Back in 2006, when Borat came out, nobody knew who he was. And so when he kind of arrived in America, and there was this big cultural divide, and he satirized that and played on that, and he was able to sneak himself, ease himself into all these situations, and nobody knew who he was. Genuinely, everybody in those situations believe that he was this journalist, this reporter. And that's why, for me, all of the interactions he has with everyone in those situations was so believable and so realistic. And I find that so funny when people are genuinely like, who is this guy? Now, everyone knows who he is. So in all the interactions he has, whether it's going to the father dance ball, whether it's going to the Republican conventions, the interactions felt a lot more staged. They felt a bit more forced than the first film for me. And I was just like, well, okay, I won't focus on that. But you're right, though. I think what it does do really well is it has a much better storyline. I think the relationship with his daughter is the best thing in the film. And you're right, Joe. It's so sweet and wholesome at the end. I didn't expect that at all. And there's a great character. I don't know her name, but she does pop in and out. And she's the one basically saying, no, you can't just trap her in a cage. You can't just sell her off to an old man. She's terrific. She's so good. And you're right. Like they managed to juggle this feminist subplot really, really well. And that was the reason I loved it. You know, I'm glad the daughter was in it. I don't think I would have enjoyed it as much as if she wasn't in it. For me, it is a satire, but the first film for me played into a satire more. This kind of feels a bit like propaganda to me. This kind of right at the end when they say, go and vote, it's like, right, what are you saying? You're saying, you know, you definitely made your mind up on that point. And I think they've released it at the absolute best time. We are like, 12 days until the election. I mean, you could not get it closer to the election. And this is a film that is saying, right, okay, you need to vote, you know, for this party, which is fine.
The only thing missing from that film is right at the very end when you get Joe Biden saying, I'm Joe Biden and I endorse this movie.
It is
pretty much a 90-minute advert for it.
Yeah, absolutely. And Gary, I'm glad you touched upon that, because there's nothing wrong with that. There is nothing wrong with who you openly admit. And even if they said at the end, go vote Democrat, like I would literally have more respect from them, because that's what they're basically saying. Yeah. And again, I have no issue with that. And I think, you know, when they go to Republican conventions, there's a great scene where he dresses up as it's kind of redneck right-wing singer, and it was scary. It is genuinely scary, and it made my stomach turn. And those bits for me, I was like, wow, you're going for the jugular here. And I wanted more of that. I wanted more of him disguising himself a bit more, because I think if he had gone on as Borat, they would have bought it straight away. But because he dressed up as a completely different persona, and he has to do that a lot in the film, because like I said, everyone knows him as Borat. So those bits, were he managed to get authentic reactions from those people, and it is scary. And yeah, so I don't disagree with what he's doing, but I just wish it was more open to the fact that this is what we are doing, and just be more honest, really. But like I said, I enjoyed it. It flew by. I thought the daughter was great, and I, again, Joe said it's sweeter than the first film. It's more wholesome than the first film, and it's come at a really important time in kind of our political history. So yeah, I enjoyed it. Not as good as the first film for me. But yeah, I think fans of the first film will really enjoy this too. Let's move on now to something very different, our final film, and this is The Secret Garden. So this is the reimagining of the classic film. Very much looking forward to this. My other half absolutely loves the original Secret Garden, so she's kind of a critic of this, really. But basically, the story follows Dixie Exerix. Sorry if I just butchered your name, Dixie. She plays Mary Lennox. She has to suddenly flee India after her parents die, and she's sent to live with her uncle, Archibald Craven, played by Colin Firth. And then you've also got the maid and the servant in the place, played by Julie Walters, called Mrs. Medlock. And she basically has to go and live in Scotland in this estate. And while exploring, she discovers a hidden magical garden. Here's a clip.
Mrs. Medlock says you're cluttering up the place. She'd have me send you away to school.
I don't want that, sir. I like it here.
Then we will find you a governess.
No, I've no need of a governess. I've too much to learn here at Misselthwaite, sir.
This place has nothing to teach you.
I want to play out of doors. It's too hot to do so in India.
I'm obliged by law to have you taught.
And we'll need to break the law, won't we?
So that was a clip there from The Secret Garden, the reimagining of the classic tale. And like I said before, this is available in cinemas, but also available on Sky Cinema. And I think we are quite lucky, aren't we, here in Wales, because we are unable to go to the cinema. So I think this has come at a perfect time. And I think, you know, we spoke about streaming, and I think this is the good thing about streaming, is the fact that we can still watch it. And I've got to be honest, I didn't feel like I missed out on anything, to be honest with you, not seeing it in the cinema. If you look at the ticket prices and some of these cinemas, like £10 a ticket, I was quite happy sitting in my living room, turn the lights off. I've got quite a nice TV. And I quite enjoyed this. I thought visually it was stunning, as you expect from this sort of story. I thought the lead was great. I know people have issue with it because I think she comes across at the start as a bit of a brat. But for me, she really developed as a character, and I started to actually really like her towards the end. You've got Amir Wilson, who plays Dickon, and he doesn't get a big part in this, but I thought he was really excellent in kind of the supporting role, and I wish he got more screen time. And in terms of Colin Firth here, I don't know. He's not in it much at all, and I didn't really take to his character. He's playing the father. His wife has died. He's starting to get over the grief. He plays a similar character that he did in Nanny McPhee, and really reminded me of that character. But I just couldn't quite invest in him. I couldn't quite sympathise with his situation. Same with Julie Walters. I feel like we have these great actors, and they're hardly in the film. A lot of the film takes place in the Secret Garden, and a lot of the film is left to Dixie Exerix here, who is just really given a really weighty role, and I thought she does a really, really good job here. I thought it was sweet. I thought it was dramatic when it needed to be. There's a kind of a plot twist towards the end involving the house, which I just thought came out of nowhere, and I was just a bit like, oh, did we really need that? But to be honest, I thought the film was really heartwarming, really uplifting. I know people who are huge fans of the original might criticize certain things. I know they made certain changes compared to the original. But for me, I thought it really, really worked. I thought it was a really, really kind of sweet family film to watch. But what do you think, Gary?
It's weird because I knew of The Secret Garden, that it was a book by Frances Hodgson Burnett, but I'd never read the book, and I'd never seen a single version of the movie. So this is my introduction to this whole world, and I thought it worked really nicely. It's charming and elegant. I say the movie's being sold on two major actors in Colin Firth and Julie Walters, but they're very, very underused in it. But thankfully, all the younger actors, the kids, are superb. So that makes up for the fact that you're not really making the most of your star quality. We were chatting about it yesterday on Larry's show, and the director said there were very little visual effects in this film, which, when you see the actual Secret Garden, you go, that's even more impressive, because the garden itself is a lovely thing. It's almost a character on its own. And yeah, it's also nice to see a children's film or a family film that isn't going at 110 miles per hour and giving you epilepsy. So there's something, it belongs to that same lineage as films like The Railway Children in that way, that there's something not kind of old-fashioned, but almost classical in its nature. And yeah, I think that's probably the selling point for this. It's a film that's set out of time and is just very elegant. And it's just a lovely thing to watch, I think.
Yeah, definitely. You really hit the nail on the head there about kind of it being classical and traditional. And it is kind of, it does feel old fashioned, but in a really nice way. And I think it captures the essence of the classic story as well. Like you said, it reminded me a lot of The Railway Children at points. And it isn't political. I think we've had a lot of politics this week, and it is a film that you can enjoy. And it's a great form of escapism as well. If you want to kind of take your mind off what's going on right now in the world, it works really well for that as well.
Well, I haven't seen it, but you've sold it to me, so I will watch it this weekend for sure.
Definitely. And who knows, you might want to build your own secret garden, Joe, in the back garden.
Maybe.
I'd take some flowers, you know. Ooh, smell the flower. Oh, it's a lily. Oh, it's a rose.
Sounds good. That's my weekend.
Absolutely. Well, that's all we've got time for on today's show. It has absolutely flown by. Can I just say a massive thank you to Gary Slaymaker? We've had such a good laugh on the show.
Yeah, really.
And big thanks to Liam Neeson for helping on that, definitely. and all the rest. Gary, thank you so much for coming on. Before you go, would you like to promote yourself? Where can people find you? I know, obviously, you're on Radio Wales every week. So tell us a bit more about that. Where can people find you online?
Radio Wales between 3 and 3:50 every Friday afternoon, talking at the cobblers with Eleri Sean, and just spouting any old nonsense I can about films that I love and hate. so there's that. Yeah, I also my own company called Slay Cop. We do stuff off and on. We've got two videos out on YouTube at the moment in Welsh. So if you don't speak Welsh, they're not much use to you. We've created two characters called Wyn and Viv, who are technically two hillbillies from West Wales who do commentary on videos. The first one was a fashion show. And you can't think of anyone worse to describe a fashion show than two rednecks from West Wales. But they do it. The second is called Shoi Fashion a Lamb Roast Alta Blacca is the first video.
Well, that's a mouthful.
Yes. And the second one is Tair Sir Sport, which is three counties of sport, which is the idea being that Carrigshire, Pembrokeshire and Carmarthenshire came together to do their own lockdown Olympics. And again, Wyn and Viv are providing commentary on that. My mother's comment was, does it have to be so sweary? Which, as far as I'm concerned, is the best review I could have.
Well, you've done really well for this podcast, to be fair. You. So well done.
Yeah, well done.
Yeah. Diolchafar, Gary, you're welcome back anytime. And thank you again. And thank you for listening. And don't forget, you can catch all our old episodes on Mixcloud. We're also on Apple Music, and we're also on Spotify and Anchor as well. And you can follow us on social media. We're on Facebook under the Dan and Joe Film Show. We're also on Twitter and Instagram at DJ Film Show. So check us out there. Have a lovely, lovely week, and make sure to tune in next episode for our Halloween special. Well timed, Joe. Well timed.
Yeah, well
thank
done.
You for listening, and goodbye.
Bye bye.